on it today. Quack! You can join us, man. Quack!
Do it, man.
12-0. I am Adam Chabail. I forgot the intro. No worries. This is the Quack 12 podcast, the most official, unofficial Oregon Ducks podcast in the world. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Aaron Schroeder. How you doing, man?
This is smart. Chimeo.
Good one. Delete that from the podcast.
No, that's definitely
because
staying.
It's embarrassing because we have we got a real guest on today's show. We've got the one, the only friend of the pod, probably has the record for most guest appearances on this podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
Hithloday from Addicted to Quack. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Do you like to be called Hithloday 1 or is it cool to call you Hithloday?
Hithloday's fine. I signed up for that username more than a decade ago, and was not the first one who got to it, and so I had to be Hithloday 1.
Which technically means you're the second?
Yeah, I suppose. I have attempted to find the Hithloday primes of the world, and universally failed. Like, they don't... It's like someone registered for this obscure literary reference, you know, a minute before me and then promptly fell off the face of the earth. It's very frustrating.
They're probably waiting until you, you know, offer Buko bucks for it.
Mm. To this day, no one anybody, has gotten...
Did you tell anybody before you chose it that that's what you were going to choose?
No, of course not. The purpose of a pseudonym is that you do not do that behavior.
Oh, I guess that's true. Good point. Not even your parents.
Yeah, that would be something.
But we're here, as always, to talk about Oregon football. Unfortunately, last week, it was a bye week. It seemed like actually a pretty good week to have a bye, considering the amount of starting quarterbacks that went down in the Pac-12. But this is something, obviously, Hithloday's been doing some amazing film reviews over at Addicted to Quack, and you've been making it a point that you didn't want to, I guess, like, put all your cards on the table, or maybe a better way to put it is you wanted to give yourself some time to really be able to study this new Avalos defense. And so now that you have 4 games under your belt, do you feel pretty confident in saying you can at least see what this defense is wanting to do?
Yes, definitely. And my article is going up tomorrow morning, or maybe will already be up, depending on how long it takes the audio editing on this podcast. What's interesting is, sort of by coincidence, or maybe it wasn't, maybe that's how I got on their radar screen, I did film study of Avalos' defense in 2017 when Oregon played Boise State for the bowl game. And, you know, I went back while I was doing this project, I went back and looked at, you know, some of my notes and a couple of clips from that. And it's not the same defense. Like, it shares a number of the principles, but really has adapted to the different personnel that Oregon has. And that was really the reason why I wanted to delay, you know, this late. You know, we got the news in February and here it is, you know, going to be October, you know, when I'm finally saying, okay, I think I understand this defense. But it really was worth the wait because he really tailored it to the personnel, which is quite different from the stuff they had at Boise State. Not 100% upgrades. I think Boise State had one or two players who I think were, you know, stronger in their positions than at Oregon, sad to say. And he's emphasized different things to take care of that. So I think that indicates a pretty sharp mind.
So can you tell what exactly is there a base formation that we are running out of right now? I know that obviously this is, the name of the game is kind of making you guess what this defense is going to do, especially on the line there. But is there something you're seeing more often?
Yeah. The base formation, which represents about 40% of the snaps they've taken, I've got about 200 meaningful snaps to work with. So about 80 of them it's a base 3-3-5, meaning 3 down linemen and 3 linebackers, with 5 guys running around the secondary. But the interesting part is One of those linemen is a stud linebacker who plays up on the line, and his primary job is to be a pass rusher, you know, just like any other defensive end. Mm-hmm. But he's also this, you know, fast, flexible guy who might also drop out into pass coverage or, you know, start running laterally to cover like outside runs and screens and so forth. And so he's in some senses like the fulcrum of the defense, in which is interesting because for most defenses, that's the middle linebacker. And I would say the most, you know, at least interesting position in this defense is the stud linebacker who plays up on the line and kind of off to the side, which is a little unusual. But you can, once you understand the role of the stud linebacker in this defense, you can sort of understand what the defense is reading the offense is going to do by paying attention to how the stud reacts. And it happens that Oregon, you know, recruited a guy who's almost perfect for the position. Bryson Young, number 56, who's just had a great season, you know, and I've got plenty of pretty nice video clips of him doing great stuff in my article.
Yeah, I feel like I remember the last game they kind of showcased him for a hot second. Showed off him doing the back and like how he chose which way to go.
Yeah, the very first clip successfully that I've got in my article, you know, really highlight, it's Bryson Young making the play on a screen pass. Right. Actually, it's not just a screen pass, it's like a fake screen pass that's going to the offense's right to start out with. And because Young is on the offense's left, he drops into pass coverage. But then, the quarterback flips around and he's going to throw the screen the other direction. Well, Bryson Young is positioned in such a way, and we got a beautiful video of it from the game, where he's dropped into pass coverage, and then the instant he sees the quarterback's head turn, he figures out what's going on.
Right.
And right. Reverses direction, makes a beeline, beats the guard to the play, and records a tackle for loss. It was a really nice tackle. But, you know, more importantly, the way is a little technical, but the way that he keeps his eyes and torso going one direction while his lower body is rotating going in another direction and then fluidly moves around, like it's gorgeous. If you're a football nerd, it's one of the prettiest things you've ever seen. And I put it front and center in my article for that reason.
Nice. And it's pretty interesting with Bryson Young, because I believe that it was with Hoke, right, that he kind of had his most success beforehand when we were a 4-3 for a season.
Yeah, I think that's right. That was a player that he hadn't really recorded much, and so it's really nice to see a completely different scheme, you know, suddenly highlight some players, you know. And sort of the flip side of that equation is Troy Dye, the middle linebacker, who's, you know, fan hero in Oregon, right? Like got Oregon through those tough years in 2016 and the crazy transition in 2017, is, if anything, a little de-emphasized in this defense. You know, not to say that he doesn't play an important role, he certainly does, but like most defenses, you're watching the middle linebacker to figure out the play. And Troy Dye is, you know, not that, you know, just structurally, that's not his role. His role is not to be the structural leader of that defense. He may be the emotional and, you know, providing senior leadership and all that good stuff. But in terms of like reading the play, yeah, he's just, you know, another one of the guys, which is, you know, what an interesting transition for a guy who's had like four different defensive coordinators over the course of his career.
Yeah. And then, so are there any other players that you've noticed that have stepped up because of this defense in transition in a way that Bryson Young has?
Well, Oregon lost three defensive starters last year to the draft. And then one more, Kalana Pelu, as you may recall, near and dear to my heart, former mm-hmm. walk-on, unfortunately not drafted. It's hard to believe.
Yeah. He'll get some CFL time maybe if he just keeps working at it.
And the transition to deal with those four guys' absences has been extremely smooth. They're all guys who were playing fairly well in 2018 as backups, but have really stepped forward. So Oregon lost Ugo Amadi at safety position, and Javon Holland stepped up and filled that role. If anything, I think he's played a little better than Ugo Amadi, and he's younger, which is impressive. Mm-hmm. Jalen Jelks and Justin Hollins, who were, you know, outside linebackers slash, you know, skinny DEs, have been pretty smoothly replaced by Bryson Young and Gus Cumberlander, number 45. And then Kalana Pelu has been replaced by Isaac Slade Matuatia, who was playing last year sort of in the backup role, but you could see it on film that his just, you know, just his stature, his size, was just so much better than Lana's that as soon as he, you know, had the smarts to play the role, that it was going to be an instant upgrade. So I actually think those four guys, you know, not only should be congratulated for stepping up and very smoothly filling the gaps that the departing players left, but if anything, it's an improvement, you know, maybe solely because of ISM replacing Lana. But yeah, you know, that's pretty, that those four guys I would highlight as saying like the guys who showed out the best. And the other thing is, and not to undercut my own article, in terms of the scheme is very fascinating. I like studying it. I like putting up videos. I hope people enjoy it and learn from it. The scheme is maybe 20-25% of the defensive improvement. The rest of it is the talent upgrade. And maybe execution as well. And it's sort of hard to figure out how much of that is good coaching versus just getting a year older. But, you know, the other seven starters, you know, plus a few extra, you know, who all of them have gotten better. There isn't a single guy who regressed. Right. So all of our old favorites, you know, Jordan Scott and Troy Dye, and Austin Faliu and, Thomas Graham and Diamador Lenore, actually Lenore's gotten much better. Yeah, all of those guys have gotten better, like demonstrably, not just like incremental improvement, like they've really gotten better. So, you know, you have an entire squad talent upgrade, and then there have been at least three guys off the top of my head who weren't playing at all in 2018, two true freshmen, Kayvon Thibodeau and Mace Funa, and one DJ Johnson, who's obviously not a freshman, but this is effectively the first year he's been seeing the field. And all of those guys are tremendous. And they've got big upside, too. Like, when DJ starts getting his feet right and doing something besides just bull rushing the guard, he's going to be amazing. But even as he is just pure raw strength, it's astonishing. Thibodeau, it's sort of the opposite. His technique and speed is amazing. He needs a little more time in the weight room. And Funa, my Lord, that guy is the complete package. I mean, he is built like a defensive lineman and he moves like a cornerback. That guy's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and it is pretty exciting to see how quickly that is. And from what I understand, it is a little bit easier for younger players to jump in on and make a difference on the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side of the ball.
Well, it's reactive, which means you got to have – right, the offense knows what it's doing, theoretically. the defense has to, you know, read what the offense is doing and react to it. So if you're – if you're a smart, talented guy, you can make waves fast. If you know anybody who played high school football, you know any guys who are like pretty smart but who are not the most athletic dudes in the world, they put them at linebacker, you know, because those are the guys who are like diagnosing the play and like have the shortest distance between them and the ball carrier, you know, to minimize any deficiencies they might have in their, you know, their speed or whatever. Yeah, so that's generally true. Now, there are some positions, like the secondary in particular, where experience really pays dividends. And, you know, it's probably not much of a surprise that Oregon hasn't played much in the way of their freshmen outside of Mikael Wright. And that was really only for, you know, injury reason, although that guy looks real good, too. But yeah, I would say the general sort of talent upgrade, smoothly replacing the lost players, returning that much production who significantly improved, and then adding, you know, no small number of these extremely talented, you know, first year players. That's probably the majority of it. And then a scheme that takes advantage of it is nice. A scheme that confuses opposing offenses is nice, but it's kind of gravy.
Can I get into the weeds of that a little bit?
You bet.
I just want to talk about Thibodeau, to be honest with you.
All right.
You said he needs to hit the weight room probably. And Also, I'm curious of like what he's been showing off on the field that leads to that conclusion. Is he just like not completing tackles?
But no.
I'm confused because I don't know how much play time he gets unless he makes a tackle. So I was just curious if he's actually getting utilized a lot.
He is. Okay. He's number five, and you can usually spot him pretty easily because he's the guy who's 7 yards into the offensive backfield within a second of the snap. I mean, that's the thing that really jumps out is, like, if you just look at levels, like, you know, if you're playing the video clip and you just pause it like every quarter of a second and just look, you know, where are the defensive linemen in terms of how far, you know, how deep have they penetrated? Nobody beats Thibodeau. He is so much farther back than the rest of those guys. Now he's coming around the edge, and the way that the tackle is supposed to, when he's doing a pass rush, and the way that the tackle deals with that is widening it and sort of trying to escort him deep, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's the thing where he gets behind the tackle to the point where the tackle has to turn his back to the line of scrimmage, which is really, really useful. It means if the pass is not a quick pass, if the quarterback is, you know, still waiting for somebody to get open, then right, another dude can come and fill that void. And that tackle is, you know, he's effectively occupied.
Right.
Okay. So that's extremely useful. And so, you know, to your question about, you know, is he not finishing tackles? No, that's not it. When he gets his hands around a guy, he's a good tackler.
Okay.
To your question about, like, would he be taken out because he's ineffective? No, A, he's not ineffective, and B, that's not really how this defense works. You know, it's a team effort, right? Like, if the run's not going to your side, it's not like, you know, Avalos is angry at you for not running 30 yards across the field and getting the tackle. You right. did your job. That's right. The important thing.
And it's his job. Like, he's basically the pressure cooker. He's going to put heat.
Right. I would put it this way. He's the guy who speeds up the timer on the quarterback making a decision. The reason that he needs to bulk up in the weight room is because it's that he gets around the tackle, but then that last thing that you need to do is really, really hard, and it requires both strength and just mass, you know, to make you more difficult to move, which is to bend yourself around while keeping your feet and stay under the tackle's arms so that you can get through him to the quarterback to get the sack. And that's the thing where that last second while he's bending, the tackle just shoves him and knocks him to the dirt.
Right. Okay.
Because he doesn't have the mass and the strength yet, but he's a true freshman. He wasn't even doing squats in high school for whatever reason. So, you know, that's something that I have confidence that he'll improve. It's just, you know, he's got everything else already. At this age, it's pretty incredible.
Can we talk about, so obviously we're seeing a lot more defensive fronts than I would say we had under Leavitt, I believe. And is there anything specifically, I mean, obviously we're trying to mix it up enough, but is there any trends you're seeing that go along with each specific defensive front?
Hey, yes. I'll take this one.
Oh.
So, no, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, there are three primary front configurations. The base one that I mentioned, which, you know, three down linemen, one linebacker on the line, two inside linebackers behind them. That's their base. And then this is, you know, fairly common. Most 3-3-5 defenses do this. They have a lighter pass rush package when they're reading pass in sort of certain down and distance situations, or when they've scouted the opponent and they can see, like, oh, this team, when they trot out this offensive, this personnel, they tend to pass. So that's sort of their pass defense one, which is two down linemen, two linebackers on the line, that, you know, the 2-2-2 kind of deal. And those guys, you know, tend to be lighter, more, you know, pass rush guys. And then they have a heavier configuration, which is, you know, three down linemen and then two linebackers on the line and then one or two. So they actually go to a 7-man front, you know, when they're reading run, right? You know, short yarded situation. That's fairly common, just in terms of purely which personnel and where roughly they are in the field. Where there's a lot of variation is A, which players they're playing. This front goes pretty deep. You know, there's at least three guys who can play every position and play them very well. So that's good. And B is where exactly they line up in terms of, you know, what gap, you know, am I right over the center? Am I on his shoulder? Is that guy, is my partner, is he two gaps away or just one gap away? And then on top of that, they often shift right before the, mm-hmm. right before the snap. It's called stemming, or if it's not a full gap, if they're just moving over, like from right over the dude to over his shoulder, it's called shading. And so that is where a lot of the confusion comes from. And detailing all of that is something that I take a stab at my article. But frankly, I'm not kidding. I have 200 snaps. No two are alike. I'm not joking. Nice. There are enough variables that I was not able to ever find two plays that shared Weird. Every single thing in common.
When That's do you wonderful. Think that'll start happening?
Oh, well. Well, I mean, in the next game or two, okay. It's just need a little more data.
That's great. Is there a snap that has just made you like stand up from your chair and just like applaud it? Is there one that just really made you happy to see it?
Yes. I actually put it up on Twitter. It does not appear in this article. It appeared last article, my Stanford Review article. It's when Stanford's backed up to their goal line. It's like second and 13. It's their reading pass. And Drayton Carlberg, who's, you know, been a backup his whole career, right? He's, you know, was a three-star, you know, not a heralded recruit. In fact... I recall at the time he was recruited, people pointing to Drayton Carlberg as evidence of, oh, look how the Oregon recruiting has fallen off. They're getting guys like Drayton Carlberg.
He's so great.
And he lines up directly across from Stanford's left guard, who is a four-star redshirt senior, Devery Hamilton. And he pushes that guy back 7 yards. And it's not schematic. You know, Andy Avalos didn't have a damn thing to do with it. Like, I'm sure he was happy for it. It was Coach Feld's sack. It was Drayton Carlberg, little old Drayton Carlberg, just physically overwhelming. And I mean, yeah, I think I did stand up and salute. It was pretty awesome. The other clip that I put up on Twitter recently on my Twitter account, IthlaDay1, it was also from the Stanford game. It was also a play in which they were backed up, where it's a loop stunt. It's actually two different stunts. One is the inside linebackers. One inside linebacker starts to crowd the line, and the other one is a little further back. But then as soon as the ball is snapped, they switch. The guy who's up on the line drops back into coverage to cover Colby Parkinson, who's the, you know, primary target on the play. And the guy who was, you know, backed off and looking cool and disinterested immediately makes a beeline for the quarterback, and this sort of like causes the guards to, switch up, like, oh, shit, different guy's coming. Oh, my God. And that opens this gap for the end man on the line to loop all the way around and run, and he's so fast he's able to do this, run into that gap, and the two of them wind up disrupting Costello's throw and taking away his primary read, so that he throws this wobbly duck of a pass, and Holland picks it off. It was great. I mean, it was just gorgeous. It was like every part of the defense working, you know, together to produce this, you know, this incredible, you know, not game changing, the game was pretty well in hand, but like that was it. That was the nail in the coffin, because that, you know, Oregon getting an interception at that point and then a touchdown was basically inevitable, and Stanford was never going to get enough points to come back from that big of a deficit. And it was the defense, you know. And when was the last time you can remember as an Oregon fan where the defense had the, you know, nail in the coffin play? Not that often, right?
I can never remember it.
That's true.
I don't know what
you can't remember last week's game either.
I mean, to be fair.
So do you feel as if this team is making basically a philosophy of much more of relying on your defense, something that we haven't done really? I mean, we certainly did it last couple of years a bit, but are you feeling a real switch to almost an SEC style of, hey, we just need to not turn over the ball, our defense will help us out here?
I think there I think the coaching staff is aware that that is a viable game strategy. I don't know if that's their A strategy or not. Who knows, we may see a different strategy in the future. I do think that was definitely the strategy in the Stanford game, which is why that was such like a deeply and pleasurably ironic game, because that was exactly how Stanford was, you know, beating Oregon in like 2012, 2013 was, you know, we're just going to march down the field with efficiency plays. If we don't get that third down, I don't care. We'll punt it and we'll get better field position.
We'll throw a touchdown to our big tight end.
Right, exactly. And we'll play defense and slow you down and control the clock and control the field. And really, like, field position is this thing that it's difficult for fans to notice because the camera gets zoomed in and you sort of forget, are they on the 30? Or are they on the 20? Or are they on the 10? But like, when you're consistently making your opponents start from their 10, 12, 8 yard line, and you're starting from your, you know, 30 or 40 yard line, it's like, it's huge. It's like they have to go an extra 20 yards. You have to go, you know, 20 fewer yards. You're, you know, effectively like you have a 40 yard advantage on them every drive. Like, you know, every drive is the equivalent of you hit a 40-yard pass. And then, you know, Oregon fans are like, where are my 40-yard runs? I'm furious that there's no 40-yard runs. And it's like, okay, you know, I would like to see more of those as well. But if you're playing the game in such a way that you get a 40-yard advantage for free without having to do anything more than play your game, exactly.
Do you have, first of all, can you help me with the punter's name? Is it Blake Mimone?
Yes.
Okay.
Nailed it. Good job, buddy.
How many tries did we try last time, though? I think, especially during that Stanford game, he deserves game ball. That was amazing performance.
Yeah, he was booting it.
And you could just see, it was just like, they are so fucked. Like, this offense is not, I think it was like three or four times they started, like, behind the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
And they weren't marching down the field. I mean,
yeah, they had 11 meaningful possessions. Five of them started at their 12-yard line or worse. And it made it, you know, sort of especially like, you know, Oregon fans are frustrating online. Big surprise, right? When Oregon at the end of the first half had their one poor field position, drive where they started at their 6-yard line with like, I don't know, a minute and a half left on the clock and three timeouts. Like, everybody and their mother online was like, Oregon should be taking shots here. Like, yeah. I want to see what we can do. And I'm just like, I'm very glad that you people are not coaches.
Yeah. This is
what Oregon was doing to Stanford, you know, making them play desperation football because they're that far backed up, you know, is far more likely that you make a mistake there and it's a costly one that changes the game than you are to do something that's going to guarantee you the win because you already had the win guaranteed. It's like, this is basic probability mechanics. Like, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, that Stanford game. And I actually got some decent questions.
Wait, I have a question.
Okay. Okay. Well, before the decent questions, let's get to Aaron's question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I get it. I get it. Good joke, Adam. I am curious. Did we already actually talk about this and I zoned out? It's possible.
Is this your question?
How do you find, do you see the defense holding up in the next few games? Because I did read online that people are talking shit that it won't be able to withhold like the next three games the teams were playing.
They basically in the last in 16 quarters of football they have not allowed a touchdown in 10 of them, or no, in 14 of them, which it's kind of hard to imagine that's gonna, you know, last the entire season.
Sure. Basically it's like, was the caliber of team we were playing, you know, sans Auburn, were they just lower? And so people are like, well, when we play real schools,
that's an interesting question. Montana is a very good FCS team. They just upset number four UC Davis on Saturday. You know, great win for them. They're probably locked for the FCS playoffs. They're Segarin, the Jeff Segarin ratings, which does all Division I teams, all 256 of them. You know, top to bottom. So like number one is Ohio State or Alabama or whatever, and like number 52, 56 is like Valparaiso or some team you've never heard of. has Montana actually ranked higher than Nevada? Yeah, that's a very solid team. They have a very good offense. Oregon shut them down. Nevada, it sometimes looks like a really good offense. However, they just lost to Hawaii 54-3 at home. Now, their offensive line has, like, I think two broken arms, and their quarterback was injured too.
I liked that guy.
Yeah. And, like, I was trying to read a recap. Well, you should look up your friend Nathan and ask him, you know, what happened in that game, because I wasn't able to watch it.
Friend of the podcast.
I looked up some of their, you know, the stats. I was like, what's going on? I'm like, oh, that's a different quarterback. Oh, that's a different, you know, line configuration. Oh, they had a punt go over the guy's head. That's problematic. So, like, I don't know. Maybe their offense is probably a little better than that, but that was sort of like, yikes. A
shaky moment.
They scored 9 points in two games. And then Auburn, you know, Auburn turns out to have a pretty decent offense. Like, I don't think there's sort of any shame there in that sense. And, you know, Oregon, right. The defense sort of got put in some bad positions, spots, because of how many, you know, Oregon offensive skill player guys were out and they couldn't sustain drives. And then Stanford is the interesting question. I don't, you know, when I published my summer preview of Stanford, I got a ton of pushback from battered Oregon fans who were just like, I said in my summer preview series, like, Stanford is poised for a huge drop off here. And I got, you know, pushback from Oregon fans who were like, no way. They're going to destroy us. I'm terrified. No, you're wrong. You're real dumb. And then it, you know, it happened, and they're like, oh my God, you're slightly less dumb than I initially thought. Yeah, I'm still pretty dumb, but like, still, it was sort of like hard for me to avoid crowing about it. And then I immediately sort of turn around and I'm like, when I say that they're a bad team, I mean bad relative to the David Shaw program that was going to BCS bowls every year, and like a bad season for them was only 10 wins. Like, I don't mean they're bad like they're Oregon State bad. And then, you know, sure enough, they beat Oregon State, you know, like, as we were joking about, you know, constantly, is, you know, Oregon State's going to beat Stanford. Like, no, they're still a very talented team. They're still very disciplined. They don't quite know what they want to do on offense because David Shaw's a stubborn fool. But like, it's not that they don't have skill talent. It's not that they don't have good quarterback play. It's not that they don't have an offensive line that can handle pretty much any defensive front except for Oregon's. Yeah, I mean, Segarin has them ranked as a top 40 team. Like, it's, you know, that's a middle of the road win on Oregon's schedule. Now, that's crazy because Stanford has never, you know, in most Duck fans' memories who might be listening to this podcast, Stanford is a middle of a road team, you know, undiscovered territory. Although, if you look at the history of Stanford football, that is, you know, pretty much always what they've been. So, yeah, I think that, you know, that's, we're going to finish the year as that being a fairly quality win. I think they'll finish with, you know, probably 6 wins and an easy bowl win. And, you know, it'll be like, yeah, that was solid. And they had a real rough schedule, especially they had a real rough schedule at the beginning of the year. And, you know, they're going to do the standard Stanford thing, which is look bad at the beginning of the year. And then when you're not paying attention, they'll win like 5 of their last 7 games.
Sure. But yeah. What about the future games that we play?
Oh, well, Cal, I don't think Cal's offense is going to give Oregon a whole lot of trouble. You know, their quarterback is injured, which is really unfortunate. And
you're not a monster mobster.
Well, yeah, if I could expound just a little bit, too, with the using the Auburn thing as a catalyst, I guess. The thing that I kind of felt like I noticed was that for the first half, right, the defense was playing super duper hard and going really extreme. And then the second half, you could really see that they were winded and like, they slowed down.
Do you mean Cal's offense against Arizona State last week?
No, I mean our game against Auburn when defense was on the field. So yes. It looked like we were getting tired in the second half on that one pretty extremely. And I'm like, well, if we start meeting teams where the offense makes us work like that, is it something it looks like they've gained control over of, like, you know, just expending energy too quickly?
You know,
were there too many factors to know what was going on there?
I don't. This is a question. I have turned this over in my mind a lot, and I don't really have a satisfactory answer for you, unfortunately. The reason is, I know the phenomenon that you're talking about. In the second half, especially, they have a really great running back, Jartavius Whitlow, or Booty Whitlow, everybody calls him. And he's great. I honestly think he's a Heisman caliber running back. And that's what was happening over and over, was like Oregon looked like, from the camera angle that I have access to, they looked like they were in a position to tackle him, you know, stuff him. And then he would like somehow get 8 yards. And yes. I was like, what happened? And
that was one of my biggest notes, is like, how does it look like we are getting him and then he just keeps mowing us down?
Aaron, I would love to have an answer for you, but I just don't. I would require another angle of those plays, and the broadcast just never showed them, and I sadly do not have access to the All-22. I can't tell whether or not it was a guy who was out of position, or he was in position and he got run over, or he started to make the tackle and figured he had it, you know, done and wasn't giving maximum effort. And you know, Whitlow
like
was
Auburn. That would never happen.
Exactly. I don't have a good answer to that question. I think I can answer your question in a different way, which is that I'm not worried about it. And the reason for that is that the worst of all of those possibilities is that the defense was just, you know, exhausted and they can't sustain this level of play, you know, at a high level for very long.
Right. But maybe 2 years from now.
That may be true, but not where I was going with this. That there's no team, with the possible exception of Arizona State, that's on Oregon's schedule that I'm worried about them doing that to. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure that was the problem. But even if it is, we'll have to see with Cal, you know, with a backup quarterback, they're probably going to rely on their running game, and they have two very good running backs. So we'll have to see, what they're able to do. If, as I expect, they don't really have a problem containing Cal's running game, then I'll be very confident for most of the next 7 games. You know, I don't think, you know, it's going to be Colorado. I don't think, you know, Washington's got some good running backs, but it's more like they break big plays. They don't really have hammers. You know, Washington State, I love Max Borgie, but as their game against Utah just demonstrated, when they have a huge rushing advantage, Mike Leach is too stubborn to utilize it. You know, they should have been running Borgie about half the time in that game, and they weren't because they're dumb. USC has gone to an air raid. Arizona, you know, I don't know who's running their offense at this point, if it's Khalil Tate or Noel Mazzoni, but like, they have great running backs. They don't use them. Mm-hmm. Arizona State, Cal was, you know, did a fairly good job at bottling up Eno Benjamin until they imploded. And then the last game is Oregon State, which, you know.
Yeah, even Jamar Jefferson's out still, right? So
I don't know. That's unfortunate, because I really like Jefferson. But
Final question.
Okay. Well, final question and then a bunch of questions. So
I'm done with – this is my final question.
Okay. All
right.
And then I'm totally feeling great about everything I've said, and I'll probably never say anything again.
Okay.
In percentage form – answer the following. What are our chances of beating Washington? Give me the love, baby.
49%. I still like Washington. Because it's at home.
Oh, my God. That's so tight.
Because it's at home for them, and they're going to be up for it. Because, I mean, it's the game that's going to determine the North. Like, they're not gonna be overlooking it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that game circled in red ink and have for, you know, over a year.
Dude, this is gonna be so tight. Should we all get together and watch it? I will drive to Oregon.
Well, no, it's in Seattle, baby.
Oh yeah, come up here. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
I'll watch it on TV down there. I don't give a shit. Let's get together.
To get floating Wendy's, or I understand there's some sort of burger battle going on in Seattle right
Dick's
now.
Dick's versus Wendy's.
What?
Mm. Yeah. So you know they got the whole the little water next to the next to the stadium.
No.
You don't know this?
We went to the stadium. It's called Montlake.
Yeah, we went to the stadium.
Oh, sure, Montlake. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know Montlake.
You know this. You live
there. The whole of water was very confusing.
Montlake. On Montlake.
You mean puddles? It rains, dog.
They had a little Wendy's ship, a little Wendy's boat, passing out Wendy's burgers for money, and Dick's got really pissed about it.
And so they...
So now there's a burger battle.
So do they have a boat?
I don't think they... I think they're making a boat. They're forging a boat now.
Motherfuckers better get a boat, because otherwise they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Boats win.
Honestly, Dick's is kind of gross, too.
It is freaking garbage.
It is
I mean,
nasty.
I don't like Wendy's, but Dick's is just cardboard with mayonnaise.
When you start eating, I'm trying to be mature about this and not make jokes out of this, but when you're eating a lot of Dick's, it's like that meat. Eventually, you start tasting like this meat is really low quality. And
oh,
just
it is
nasty.
Cardboard. Yeah. When I first got here and was like, what the fuck is Dick's? Somebody was like, I'm going to take you to Dick's. You have to have a Dick's burger.
Oh, and someone so building it up like that would be like,
yeah,
oh, this is
bite
what?
Number one. I was like, this is garbage. And then I didn't finish it. I threw it away. I was like, I'm from Texas, dog.
Yeah, you're a Texas boy, so you're all about.
Give me a
friggin'
Whataburger and I'll talk to you.
Yeah, I haven't had that yet. It looks good. But
ooh,
it's
the best.
Let's get to some other questions here. Yeah. A lot of these will probably be pretty quick because I think we've already answered a lot of them. Tweet at us. Sure, why not? At Quackville Podcast. Are they really the fourth best defense in the country? This is by Should Have Been a Duck.
I haven't done film study on 130 teams. I don't know. I'm not the right person to ask that question. I think it's... I'll put it this way. It's not an illusion. It's not because they've been playing garbage offenses. It's not because, you know, they got lucky or, you know, offenses did, you know, extremely stupid things. You know, Oregon lined up and did what they wanted to do. The opposition did what they wanted to do. Oregon was the better team on more than, you know, a significant majority of snaps. You know, how that compares to other defenses, who's to say?
I'll say, no, they are the best defense in the country.
Fact.
Ka-Duck, or C-A-Duck, asks, are we rotating bodies along the D-line as often as it sometimes seems like we are? I've seen more of guys like Ware Hudson, Poti, and Dorless than I was expecting, and often with first-teamers in there and in important series.
I don't know what Ka Duck's perceptions are, and so therefore I cannot peg my answer to them.
that too.
They are deep at the defensive line. Most importantly, they are clearly prepared if there is an injury or something. In fact, Austin Value wasn't playing for a while. So that's the most important answer. I think a lot of those guys like Dorless and Ware Hudson, you know, the true freshmen, they're not quite ready for prime time yet. Those are more like garbage time substitutions, you know, to get the new guys some play. And even, you know, that you can play four games and retain your red shirt now. So they may, you know, they may be carefully, you know, doing that. But they certainly, I mean, yeah, they're certainly putting guys in and out, including guys who were like never huge contributors before, but like Gary Baker's playing, you know, maybe half the snaps Gary Baker is playing, maybe half the snaps Drayton Carlberg is playing. Yeah, it's nice to see.
I think this is definitely be one we can't answer now, but should have been a duck. Levitt was our Pepsi defensive overlord. Are there any quirky personality traits that Avalos has that we can make into a meme? I think right now he's pretty squeaky clean. I mean, he does have alliteration in his name.
So he's Mr. Clean. Done.
Done. Okay, sure. Yeah. He's squeaky clean, so he's Mr. Clean.
What's yours?
What?
Have you noticed him doing anything funny?
No. Well, he's up in the booth, so, you know, you don't get to see sideline antics. What I think is interesting is that as far as I'm aware, Oregon is the only Power 5 team that has people of Latina descent at, you know, head coach, offensive and defensive coordinator.
That's what I've heard too. don't really want to make a meme out of that, but it is
interesting. I know. It feels like any meme that you could make of it would be a disaster.
It's
just sort of interesting. I mean, Oregon recently passed a law that requires, you know, when there's a head coaching vacancy to interview minority candidates. And I'm not sure whether or not Mario Cristobal counted as that because the way that, you know.
Oh, yeah. Because they didn't interview him or.
Well, no, because the census. Hispanics are officially classified as whites.
That's right.
You know, in the sense, you know, so I don't know if, you know,
I always get confused when I get that census. I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to put here? It's like white Hispanic. I guess that's perfectly
Realize that. That is,
If you ever see like the line on a form that says like non-Hispanic whites, that's why.
It's confusing as hell.
Oh my God.
What has Jordan Scott? This is from ATCQ. What has Jordan Scott's impact looked like this year? He was the perfect nose tackle in a 3-4 scheme under Leavitt as he ate up so much space. I remember quotes from him preseason about being excited to record more stats in Avalos' scheme, but that doesn't appear to be happening. If anything, his numbers seem slightly down. Is he still proving really effective in collapsing the middle of the line to allow linebackers to come in and make the plays, or has he been less effective this year?
Definitely not less effective. That I can 100% without equivocation tell you he's been as or more effective on every snap that he's in. I would advise you not to look at stats for defenses. They are, you know, they're very misleading. In fact, you know, I've gotten a little bit of a head start on my Cal write-up, and you know, probably the poster child for don't look at defensive stats, they're almost worthless, is Evan Weaver, who, you know, Evan Weaver leads the universe in tackles, but they're all tackles that are like 6 yards deep, you know? Like, he's great at cleaning up the play. He's not real great at making the play. Not that he never does it, but like, if you just looked at his tackle numbers, you would think that guy lives in the backfield, and he doesn't. Defense is a team effort.
It's like my Thibodeau thing.
You can look at an entire team's number of sacks and tackles for loss, and that can tell you something about how much backfield penetration they're getting. But individual players, not forget it. It's just not useful. And here's the other thing. The way that the three down linemen work, in Avalos' scheme versus Leavitt's scheme are very, very similar. That's the position of least difference, the way that those guys play. So, you know, any discrepancy is pretty much just talent situation, you know, who the offense is, what their blocking preferences are, et cetera. You know, don't read anything into that. Jordan Scott's great.
This is why we launched the Jordan, aka Fat Mac, Scott for Heisman. For Peisman campaign is because I think that would really be a good way to reward him for all of his work. I think it'll happen. I still think it'll happen. Which true freshman will have the biggest impact on this team in 2 years? Follow up question: what's his Patreon page? This is from Pond Junkie.
Wow. Okay. Are we just doing the defense?
Defense only.
Well, I did ask for defense only. I did ask for defense only in the question. So yeah, let's do defense.
Mace Funa. I maybe not in the stats, although as I just finished ranting, like the stats are misleading for defensive players. But in terms of his like versatility, and just what a freak he is in terms of what the size that he brings to the table, but without sacrificing speed. That guy is amazing.
That's awesome.
His Patreon page?
Yeah, which is, I don't know. You gotta look that up. I like how he's just
NCAA violation.
Yeah, asking us to cheat. It's all right. You do your own research. This is not something we can put in writing. You know that. And then I will absolutely not read this. This is from Daniel Duck. It is literally the length of one of your articles, Hithloday. He's a huge fan.
So wait, you're telling me this question is 256 characters?
I'm telling you this is not a question, and I'm telling you this is about 2,000 words.
Let's skip it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to skip
Why'd you even bring it up?
Well, I'm saying Hitler Day, just if you, you know, if you have some time to read more about the ducks, there you go. It says it's titled To Prepare for Hitler Day, and apparently he's been doing a lot of film research, him or herself. And then, other than that, it looks like we finally got through to them. That's a question about the offense. Juwan Johnson, we don't need to talk about it. And I don't think you have any answers, probably.
Yes, I've done 0 seconds of film study of Juwan Johnson. I don't know why I would have any insight into that guy.
I'm sure you know if he's going to be playing against Cal, though, right?
Oh, yeah, they definitely have insider info on that. But okay. I'm specifically withholding to be a jerk.
All right. Yeah, withhold. I mean, that's what Addicted to Quack is all about. We only give you a little bit at a time until you're hooked.
There's no such thing as leftover quack.
Do you think
you said you were done with questions?
Yeah, I know, I've got one more. It just came
this is
to
literally
me.
The final question, then we're going to the picks.
All right. Do you think you have enough working knowledge that you could have made Friday Night Lights better because of gameplay?
I don't think that show would have been improved by superior football film. Like that show is the fictional version of Last Chance U. Like the drama is all the off-field stuff. Oh.
Do you enjoy the show? Because I'm considering starting to watch it. I've never seen it. There's a movie and a show, right?
Oh, you're talking about
Friday Night Lights. Last Chance U. I get what it is. Yeah.
If you're, it's a soap opera for dudes.
Let's talk about the show. It's the one that everybody likes.
Usually soap opera. Well, isn't that what college sports in general are?
I mean, that's what the Skip Bayless model is, certainly. I don't know. I'm in it for the strategic gameplay.
So you're a Varsity Blues guy. You're more of a Varsity Blues.
I'm more like the NFL coaches film. My favorite is actually, you know, the ESPN's been doing this for the playoff games, the national championship game, where they get all the coaches who, you know, failed and aren't in that game in to give live commentary on the game.
Fun.
Oh, it's very good. Mm-hmm. Oh, if anybody, you know, I think you can find them if you have an ESPN Plus subscription or, you know, many of them are archived. Go, if you just want to improve your general football knowledge and watch those, the coaches breaking down those plays is incredible. And they're also very engaging human beings. I mean, they have to be, they're leaders of young men. Like they have to be somewhat, you know, interesting to listen to. Mm-hmm. And then their interpersonal dynamics are really interesting. Like a couple of them, Mack Brown, who's returned to coaching, he's at UNC again.
Being a badass in general.
It's like, you know, there's all these coaches and there's some crosstalk and they're talking or whatever. And Mac opens his mouth and you know, says Dan, could you walk us through this play? And everyone instantly shuts up and are like, yes, sir. You know, I'll do. It's like the amount of respect that man commands is incredible. And if you're interested in the, you know, interpersonal dynamics of all of these alpha males, it's fascinating. Or there was another one where Gary Patterson was in it and he was like, he was mad about something. I don't really understand what he was mad about, but he was mad. And he was just dominating the conversation, breaking down these defensive plays. And people were struggling to get a word in edgewise. No, it was great. I would rather watch that than season 3 of Friday Night Lights, which was a trash season.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
What about season 2?
Season 2 is gorgeous.
By the way, guys, I just finished all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer holds up. Season 4, not so much, but
I don't know. I disagree that it holds up.
If you binge it.
Joss Whedon is a loser. His dialogue is garbage.
Okay, get out of here.
I am pleasantly surprised that Veronica Mars holds up extremely well.
Maybe that's the new series
you can't mess with.
Have you not watched? I've never seen Veronica Mars.
Oh my God, start it from the beginning.
Okay.
It's got the photographer from Just Shoot Me. As her dad.
The photographer from Shoot Me.
Enrico Colatoni.
He's a balding guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know him. Okay.
Yeah, their relationship is really cool, too.
I'll check it out. I love Kristen Bell. Show. Maybe that's the next show I need to do.
Absolute.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a better show than Game of Thrones.
Mm.
I'll say that.
Dang.
I will say that.
And with
Okay. Here's where we put our commercial. At the end of a hard work week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines, your boy, Justin Herbert, throwing, what, 5 touchdowns per game, it seems like nowadays? There's nothing else like college football, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. That's right. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. That's right, mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts. They got better lines. And you just got to go there. They're just better than any other sports book. Don't forget where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, though it should be the Ducks. And mybookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play, and it's where you should too. Look, I wouldn't be telling you guys this if it wasn't the actual best. You got to do the smart thing. You know, you're already watching these games. Why not make some money off of them? Bet a little bit, win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply the winnings, baby. Join now. I'm telling you, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code QUACK12. That's right, that is promo code QUACK12 to activate the offer. That is promo code QUACK12. MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Quack, quack. We are back on Quack.
Quack, quack.
All right, Ithaday is still with us. He's got absolutely nothing to do with his life, so he is still in studio with us. Last week, the Ducks did not play a game of football. They may have practiced. They may have played Madden. But
so we won.
Yeah, we beat BYE. I just made up that joke. Did you
That's
like
good.
That, Aaron?
That is
yeah.
good.
No one's ever made that joke before.
Really?
Last week, the week of backup quarterbacks for the Pac-12, Aaron, do you have the tallies?
The picks!
Yes, sir.
Okay, what is the score as of now?
The score is currently 27, Adam. 25, Aaron.
Okay, so I am in the lead by 2.
Barely.
Let's get to, so we're starting with the Friday game here.
It's a loose 2.
Arizona State against California. I think this was one of the, I think this and then USC Washington. Those were the real games that meant something here. Most people thought this was going to be a close one.
Wazoo, Utah was a fairly important
one. Oh, yeah. I was pretty stoked for that. I think the result made me really forget about it. But ASU versus Cal. This was an interesting year. You kind of assumed because Cal was unbeaten, and that's a nice thing, that Pac-12 was going to stomp that out. And they did in horrifying fashion because...
What did I say? I said it.
I don't know. You have it in front of you.
I said Arizona State. You said Cal. But more specifically, what I said is that you can't... The odds of staying undefeated decrease.
Sure. All right.
Three times.
Yes.
Just look
true.
At the Cowboys.
Your math won this one for you, Aaron. All right. So ASU beat Cal 24-17. Chase Garber's out for probably a long time. I'll tell you that much. And
what happened?
Devin, he got kind of like.
Oh, it was ugly.
Yeah. It wasn't like a nasty, like, hit by someone grabbed his leg.
Yeah,
he
was tripped
like,
up
right?
when he was running. Yeah.
Yeah, and he slammed real hard on his throwing shoulder.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it looked really rough. And then when he was on the sideline, it showed him like going through his teammates. And I don't know who this guy was. One of his teammates like wanted to like pat him on the shoulder, being like, "Hey, man, it'll be all right."
Oh,
it was
geez.
Like, "What are you doing?"
Oh, he was so shot up with Toradol. Like you could at the end of the broadcast, you know, the camera's like lingering on the sidelines and showing him, and he's like talking, and like the size of the grin on his face versus the injury and the like emotional toll that had, you know, it was like there's no way that dude is not high as
that's so true. I
want to try
think about
this
that.
Thing. I've never heard of it. I want some.
You get injured, we'll get you some.
All right.
That's so funny. How many times I've thought of like a serious injury, and then like later in the game you'll see them on the sideline, and it's like, wow, he actually looks pretty happy about it. Like, yeah, I never really put that together.
You got about like 150 cc's of Toradol in the system.
Toradol.
All right. Well, Toradol, so, you say, at least he got a little bit. At least he had a fun night until it wore off. So ASU gets that one.
That was an upset, though. Like, Cal was favored in that game, yeah, when they were at home. And I don't think it was like on reputation or hype, or they were undefeated, you know, or anything like that. It was with Garbers, they are a slightly better team, and at home. And then they didn't have Garbers, and they're not. The thing that's crazy about watching that film is that Jaden Daniels, the ASU quarterback, which he's thankfully good. Oregon, not only is he good, but it's very clear on rewatching that film how many things he missed, like where he was missing open receivers, handing off the ball when he should have pulled it and thrown the RPO. Like, like when he gets, you know, when he's not a true freshman, when he gets, you know, a bunch of reps under his belt, like, whoo.
That's exactly, like, if he, it is a shame for them that that offensive line is so porous.
Yeah.
Because he's making so many plays. I would not think, I mean, besides looking at him, he does look like a true freshman. Yeah. But he doesn't play like it. He's doing, well,
he looks like 98
job.
Pounds. Like, he looks like, I mean, frankly, that one of the biggest concerns that I have about the, you know, Pac-12 in general is that ASU could be a rising power, but he could take a sack and be done. Like, I don't just mean like done for a little while. I mean, like, his career could be over. Like, he's so, he just looks fragile.
And Herm still seems to be, I haven't quite looked at the numbers for, you know, Benjamin. I know they're not doing great, but is he still getting a ton of carries?
Less than I was predicting. That was actually one of the big points that I made in my summer preview article, was that, like, I think, you know, he's going to have a true freshman quarterback, and he's got, you know, Benjamin, and his history in the NFL is that he's going to hand the guy the ball 350 times, but he's actually on pace to have fewer carries than he did in 2018. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but yeah, the season's young.
Okay, so let's get to Saturday here. This game was so, for 1 week, I was a Trojan fan, and man, was that shitty. Oh my God, are they a hard team to watch. Specifically against, going against Washington, who was more than ready to play them.
Oh.
And they, USC had some opportunities, but they just, it wasn't going to work
out.
How
did you guys pick in the ASU-Cal game?
I picked Cal. He picked ASU.
Yeah, I got the point. Because I just went off of undefeated don't last, and that's literally it. It's odds.
Okay.
The idiot savant of the podcast. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We both picked USC, didn't we?
We did indeed, sir.
It wasn't, I don't know. I got stoked because I was thinking, like, hey, maybe they'll sneak in there. They do have amazing talent. But besides a lot of the obvious plays that went wrong, Hithloday, would you mind enlightening me just why this game looked so one-sided, despite the fact that actually it was pretty close?
I didn't think it looked one-sided. I mean, I think what happened was that there was a point where I think it was 14-7. And USC was about to punch it in, and Fink throws a really stupid pick, like real stupid. And like Washington baited him into it too. Like you could see the way that play was set up for, you know, it was like Washington designed it for him to throw that pick, and sure enough, he did. And, you know, and like two plays later, you know, I think that was Salvan Ahmed's, you know, giant like 89-yard run.
Yeah.
And then it was 21-7, and the game finishes 28-14. And so I could understand feeling like Washington had that game in hand the entire time, but it's not like USC couldn't move the ball. And it's not like, you know, Washington outside of that big run was like gashing them, you know, either. That was, you know, other than those stupid turnovers, which, you know, give Washington credit for, they designed it. It's not like, you know, Fink had an aneurysm and the ball slipped out of his hand. I mean, they were engineering those, so good for them. But like, if it weren't for those, you know, the turnover differential, like, you know, that was like a 21-21 game.
And then, USC's defense has, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I chose them. Also, I hate the Huskies, but USC's defense has looked good, at least that interior, and like, They look pretty scary. Those
linemen. I think they have the second or third best defensive line in the league.
Yeah, I honestly felt bad for them in this. And it kind of, looking back at it, you can almost see a little more why Utah. I mean, Utah lost because of those penalties and because of that, the red zone performance for them.
Well, and they didn't have any film on Fink. They didn't know what his capabilities were. And they, you know, the way that Utah is a good secondary, but the way that USC wants to play him, like, Utah's not going to win those 50-50 balls in the way that Washington has the horses to do.
Yeah. Well, that was a game.
That was a game.
After that, this was the game I was most excited for personally this day. Almost went to it, and then I went, I could just sit on the couch instead. Stanford against Oregon State.
Oh, boy.
Stanford, I believe they were up by 21 points. And Oregon State rallied back.
What?
They even tied it 28-28 late in the fourth quarter. Stanford then was quickly able to march down the field.
Nice.
And they got their field goal from Jet Toner.
Oh.
So Stanford wins this
baby.
31-28. Wait, who? So we both got that last one wrong. I went with Oregon State, didn't I?
You did. You went with the Beaveronis.
What about you?
I went with the Stanforinis.
Fuck. So now we're tied.
We are tied, baby.
Nicely done, Aaron.
I can't wait for this next one.
I felt cocky this week, I can tell.
I had, in the various, not for money, just hypothetical betting pools that I play in, I had Stanford in the Survivor pool winning the game outright, and nice. I had Oregon State covering the 3.5. Ooh. So when Stanford kicked that field goal, I was like... I nailed it.
Nice. That's perfect. So tight. That's perfect.
Theoretically, how much would you have won?
How much did he put down?
Zero. Nothing. Oh. Gambling is foolish and immoral.
This episode brought to you by MyBookie. That one's for real. Yeah, it is, but... Hey, so is money.
Hey,
and
I
you need
that
money.
Hard. My entire life is a gamble, I tell you what.
Buying takeout hamburgers is foolish and immoral too.
Right.
You know, we just spent 20 minutes talking about Seattle's hamburger situation.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Good Place, you know, where it's just like all the little negative
yogurt
things just add up on yogurt. Washington State played against Utah.
Yes, sir.
This was kind of each team had just been kicked in the gut. They were on the ground. They get back up. One of them was going to have that comeback win, that, all right, we're back on track. And the other one was going to, in the words of Mike Leach, feel like, what did he call them? Fat and dumb.
Yeah.
And the Cougars certainly felt fat and dumb after this one.
Oh, schnivety schnivety.
The Utes, now the number 19 Utes, defended their home turf, and they won 38-13.
That is what I'm talking about.
Tyler Huntley, I feel scared for him. I am also scared of him. He is a big-ass dude that is not afraid to put his body on the line. That is what I'll say about him.
That's far
out. His arm looks like it's gotten... Like, he always had an arm, but, like, his arm looked good in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was hitting deep shots confidently in a way that it sort of looked like he was putting up a little bit of a prayer in the past. And it was like, there wasn't any prayer this time, you know? It looked like he hit that, and he knew he hit it as he was throwing it.
That's awesome.
I like him. I still like this Utes team, but, man, that USC loss is going to haunt them for – that's so brutal.
Well, yeah, it's going to haunt
USC,
you, too, because you lost.
USC is going to take another loss and you know. And probably two more losses. Like, they're such a scattered, disorganized team. I thought the more interesting implication was for Wazoo.
Yeah. Starting 0-2 and who knows with them.
Oh, crap, really?
Well, starting 0-2 in conference, yeah.
Right.
I enjoyed it. It's what I actually wanted, obviously, just because I want every other North team to have a conference loss. But
you know you picked Washington State, right?
Yeah, I know I picked Washington State. I don't know what the hell
I was
thinking.
That you're the loser here.
So I'm down by one now.
Aaron pulls ahead.
Yeah. That's right.
Aaron Poles Ahead, and then we
got... That's basically my life. That's the name of my biography.
Aaron Poles Ahead.
No, that, I mean, that was an interesting game for Wazoo, not just because, the, you know, the outcome and how it affects the standings, but, like, it... I felt personally validated by that game because it went exactly as I predicted, which is that their offense is almost identical in terms of personnel to as it was last year. And, you know, what was happening in that game was the same thing that happened in a ton of their games, which is that their line is actually secretly not very good, their offensive line, and they let through pressure all the time. And it's just that Gardner Minshew, the golden god of a man, Gardner Minshew, had the ability to sort of like dance out of that and still make a play. And, you know, Anthony Gordon doesn't have that ability or not nearly as much. And so, you know, he was throwing bad balls or taking sacks where, you know, Minshew, you know, would make the completion. And like, I am glad that people finally got a chance to see, like, no, you know, Washington's offensive line is not, you know, we talked about this both with Jeff Neuser and with Gabe Lucas, you know, the, like, it's this fool's gold in the media where they looked at, you know, the completion rate by the quarterback compared to how few sacks he took and just inferred that the offensive line was doing their job, because usually that's exactly what it means, unless you're in an air raid with a mobile quarterback. And then it does not necessarily mean that. And so, like, to have that validation on the screen, like, I was like, yeah, exactly. I've been saying this for 2 years and no one believed me.
And then is Wazoo's defense just straight bad at tackling, because they look pretty
well,
bad.
It's like 11 free safeties out there, which is, again, something that we were talking about every time we talked about Wazoo, was that, like, it's remarkable what they've been able to do with that little defensive talent and that little size, and, like, how they're able to mobilize a bunch of small, fast dudes to do some interesting stuff on defense. And, like, Tracy Clay should probably be, you know, congratulated, because he had to completely revise his defensive system, because he came from the Big Ten, where there's just, like, four massive defensive linemen smashing their head into that wall every play. And, you know, it's pretty much diametrically opposite, and the fact that he was able to adapt to that is pretty, you know, pretty cool. But, like, yeah, just the raw talent, like, they don't have any. They probably have the least amount of defensive talent of any team in the league, barring Oregon State. I feel like the Oregon State asterisk should just be applied by default.
Yeah,
they shouldn't have to say it,
like. Yeah, so that being said, it'll be interesting when they beat us by 20. UCLA against Arizona. I chose to watch this game over much of the Washington State Utah game.
Oh, that was a mistake.
Yeah, it was. It was ugly. It was close. Dorian Thompson-Robinson did not repeat his performance from the week before, surprisingly.
What a shocker.
The biggest shocker, the real deal, Khalil, was not in this game.
What?
What was his backup? Gunnell?
Hamstring.
Yeah, oh, hamstring.
Yeah, Gunnell.
Hammy?
Yeah, it's what's his first name? Something Gunnell. Grant Gunnell. There you go. Had pretty great, I believe this is his first start. 352 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, no, he didn't look, like, bad. He was playing,
like, half
against
of that
UCLA.
Came on, like, three plays, though. Like,
yeah.
UCLA's coverage kept busting, and yeah.
It was a weird-ass game.
But he wasn't bad. I'm just saying that, like, take the 352 with a grain of salt.
Right. One of those, the team didn't play well on the defense.
Right.
And, yeah, and take this win in general with a grain of salt, because it's against UCLA, and who the hell knows. Yeah.
I do.
It was ugly. This game was ugly, but...
Yeah. It wasn't like the fun Pac-12 nonsense kind of game. It was the, like, oh,
everybody's garbage.
This league sucks kind of
nonsense. It was the 20-17 Wildcat win kind of game.
Woot.
Who'd you have? You had the Wildcats?
Of course I did.
Who did I have?
UCLA.
Why the fuck did I choose UCLA?
Aaron goes in.
Damn it.
A complete reversal.
Damn it. Damn it.
You picked
UCLA.
You picked differently in 4 out of 6 games.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Aaron got all 4 of them right.
Or 4 out of 5, actually. Yeah.
No, you both picked Oregon State.
Oh, did we?
No, I didn't.
That's right.
We both picked USC. Yeah, we both picked USC.
The world's biggest Stanford fan did not pick Stanford.
I know.
You know?
The one time. I'm not the biggest.
I think I got into his head last week. I think I fed him a lot of daydreams.
I mean, it's you or Jack. There's only two of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Well, Jack is off the bandwagon, I think.
Oh, my God. Aaron, did you listen to the literal chainsaw going on in the background?
I forgot to mention this.
I missed it.
I was like the most, like, we had to stop the podcast and say, we are not adding this in post to be assholes. Like, there really is a chainsaw going on in the background.
That's really good.
And it was like, while I was like asking about a certain linebacker and why we hadn't seen him before, and Jack starts breaking down. It's like, well, it's because he's coming back from leukemia. And I'm like, oh my God. And as soon as he says that, the chainsaw revs up.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Jesus.
Yeah. Yep. And it wasn't the Oregon State chainsaw. It was the chainsaw of Stanford's demise. Yeah, so I suck. What can I say?
I think you just said it.
Why did I go with UCLA?
Because I fed you so many beautiful daydreams that you just really started thinking you had correct answers.
Why did I go with UCLA? That doesn't make any sense. Okay.
Dude, seriously.
So now we got the real picture.
You got them all wrong.
I did. I went 0-5. God, by the way, on Addicted to Quack, I always put a pretty extensive poll there. One for just a straight pick'em, and then one for against the spread. And our website went a perfect 0-5 against the spread as well. So nice. I'm not dumb. My whole site is dumb. Saturday, October 5th.
All right, let's get into it.
It's only four games we're picking now.
Pretty okay.
Short week.
Let's do it.
Whatever. So we've got Arizona at Colorado. That's okay. The first one here. This is 1:30 p.m. Don't know the channel yet. I guess you go first, Aaron, since you are in the lead.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Buffmen.
You going with the Buffmen?
Yep.
I mean, if Gunnell's still going to be in there, it's at Colorado. Colorado looks like the more complete-ish team. Don't want to bet on Arizona. Mel Tucker's having a hell of a...
Don't forget, you're two behind, so you got to kind of
against
me here.
One behind.
Two behind.
What are you talking... You just told me that
you're two behind.
What? Yeah.
You started two ahead.
Damn it.
You lost four picks. You're gaslighting him. I swear to God. What are you doing to poor Schroeder?
The Schroeder's picks, you know. We don't know what's going to be there.
That's what we're going to call it from now
that's
on.
That's it. Schroeder's picks.
Give it to us, baby.
I'm going with the Buffmen as well.
All right. Smart decision, sir.
Just because I don't want to be wrong.
Yep. Stay safe. Or if you're going to be wrong together, you know.
After that, 5 p.m.
Right.
This is the big one. California at number 13, Oregon.
Well, obviously, I'm going Oregon.
Unfortunately, I'm going Oregon, too.
Unfortunately, you say?
I care more about these picks than the Ducks at this point, all right? Damn it, I don't think I'm going to have an opportunity to pull ahead in this one, because after that, Oregon State, actually, this is a pretty, I am watching this game, oh no, I'm not, because it's 1 hour after the beginning of the Cal-Oregon game.
Obviously, you can't watch it.
Oregon State at UCLA.
Oh boy. I'm going, man, I mean.
I can tell you this, whatever you choose, I am going with the opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's close enough.
I actually think the Beavers are going to squeak this one out. Hithloday, where are you at with this one? What do you think?
I've got UCLA.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's wrong.
I mean, it'll be, it's like 56-44, but.
Okay, yeah, okay.
UCLA. I mean, they're at home.
This honestly feels
they're
like one of those, this gives to me, I'm getting vibrations of a blown 2 minute warning time period.
A blown 2 minute warning time
either,
period.
Yeah, it's going to be either UCLA blows it and gets like an interception right there because they can't handle pressure.
Okay.
Or the Beavs are just going to have something crazy happen on there. Whoever's in that 2 minute offense, they're just going to have something crazy happen and it'll end up in Beaver's favor.
So Oregon State will be behind and will win their 2 minute offense, or UCLA will be behind And we'll be running the 2-minute offense and throw a pick and end the game.
Right.
Catastrophically.
Or also they will still be ahead, have the ball at 2-minute warning, fumble Ruski.
Try to kneel it out and fail.
Yeah.
Fumble that actually does sound very for the run back. UCLA.
Yeah. Fumble the victory formation.
I could definitely see UCLA.
I'm putting this one in the hands of the gods, if you will.
Oh my God. That's totally going to happen.
I'm going with UCLA. Baby.
Yeah, okay. You would.
Just like I did last week. Worked out for me last week.
Yes, you did, baby.
Then we got the final one. This one seems like an easy pick. I hope you go with the crazy choice here with your favorite team, Aaron. Number 15, Washington at Stanford on ESPN. 7:30 p.m.
Honestly, could be
Pac-12 after dinner.
I have, off the very misguided and little information I have, mm-hmm. I actually view that Easton fella as...
Eason.
Brett Eason?
No.
Brian Eason?
You mean Brett Easton Ellis, the author of American Psycho?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm doing. Okay, who is the quarterback for Washington State? What is this fool's name?
Jacob Eason.
Anthony Gordon.
Oh, Washington State? Anthony Gordon.
No, I'm sorry, for the Huskies. For Washington. Jesus
Jacob
Christ.
Eason.
Well, his name is Jacob, but you knew that.
You knew that.
That dude, I honestly think, is like maybe truly amazing.
I don't like
this. And he scares me, and I think he's going to win it.
So you're going against Huskies. Your preseason pick of Huskies only winning three games.
Well, it's already done. Haven't they won four already?
Oh, yeah, I believe they
have. So I'm just going to lean into this shit, and I live here. I'm telling you the truth right now, buddy.
What, you're a fucking Husky fan?
I'm a Huskies fan now.
Oh!
I got three teams that I like. I can't help it.
It took you like 2.5 years to...
I'm a lover of all, baby.
God damn. That's fucking depressing.
Obviously, it goes... Ducks, Utes, Huskies.
Ugh.
But they're,
where do
the
Buffmen figure in?
Yeah, where do the Buffmen?
Oh, shit. That's right. Huskies are at 4.
What about the Longhorns?
Great point. Huskies are at 5.
No, you can't ask them to mix in other leagues. That's apples and oranges.
It's like, I like the Seahawks, but now I also like the Cowboys.
Oh, you're a disgusting fan.
It happens. It happens.
There's just no way I can pick Stanford in this. There's no way they're going to win on the farm.
If you want to get ahead, you have to go opposite.
Which means I'm going with Washington.
Wow. So let's look at this real quick. There's no way for you to get ahead in this round.
No, there isn't.
Even if UCLA wins, you will still be 1 point behind. This feels so nice.
Okay. Well, those are the picks.
The picks.
That's right. Hithloday, you've been a fantastic guest, as always.
Absolutely.
I believe you can find your work on Addicted to Quack.
That's true.
You can find it there. Everybody else can find it.
On Addicted to Quack. Okay. And then you can... My guess is, yes, as of right now, when you are listening to this, you will be able to go to Addicted to Quack and read Hithloday's defensive write-up covering the Oregon Ducks. At HithlodayAlman1 is your Twitter account?
No, just HithlodayAlman1. Same as the handle that I write under.
At HithlodayAlman1 is where
you
can find him on
number
Twitter.
One ZZ Top fan.
The almond was only in there because Gmail requires you to have a list last name. It's an extended Greek pun, actually.
The best kind.
No one got the original pun, and certainly no one is going to get the original.
I get it. I'm just not going to talk about it.
All right. So that would be the first thing you don't talk about that you don't know about, Aaron. Aaron, it's been wonderful having you on the show, as always.
Let's see if I return after that comment, sir.
All right, we will see you all next week on the Quack 12 podcast. Go Ducks.
Go Dorks.